general members, officials of the department, we are about to start the second day, which is the last day of our workshop. On behalf of the portfolio committee, I wish to welcome officials from CCMA, NEDLEC, and Productivity South Africa. Give us as much as you can. As you can, we will ask questions. Because it is our first day with you, we don't know each other at all. We are all new. We want to understand what you are doing so that we are well equipped to do our oversight and to be ready for the budget vote that will be taking place next week. We will ask questions. Be comfortable with questions. Once you we see that you dodge the question, please don't be too general, because the more you are general, the more we want to ask you more questions. And where there are challenges, please be honest with us, tell us the challenges and how you how those challenges came into being and how are you going to be searching them. Do you have a plan to sort them out? And the time frame, don't be general. So it will be easy for us. Just give us the time frame. Then the questions will be few. Over to you, CCMA.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and it's an honour to be here before the committee and to be presenting to you on the CCMA's current work and its budget for the current financial year and its strategic plan. Chair, given the people that know each other, would you like me to introduce the delegation as the chairperson? So with me in the front here is the chairperson of the governing body of the CCMA, Mr. Daniel Dube. We're doing a dual act because he's been the chair for a short period of time. We thought we'd work together. The next item is Afro Sigurdar, the National Senior Commissioner for Collective Bargaining and Mediation. And then on my left is Ntombi Boikotso, the Chief Financial Officer of CCMA. Okay. At the back row, so not directly behind me, some members. To the left is the Manager, the Office of the Director, and the Senior Governing Body Secretariat, Mr. Dawood Dada. And then Cameron Moriani, the National Senior Commissioner for Legal in the CCMA. And then next to me is Arun Ramchod. She is a member of the Governing Body for Business. And next to her, Edith Menache, the Chair of our Human Resources Subcommittee, as well as a member for Business of the Governing Body. And then for Labour, it is Maris Maloto, who is next to Mr. Menache, also a member of the Governing Body. And then I have to put in the Department of Labour representatives because they're also part of the Governing Body. And that's Mr. Felipe, who's a member for Government. Thank you very much, Chair. If that's in order, I will begin. Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair, I'm just going through my pack here. Unless I've missed it, I don't have a copy of this presentation on it. Everybody, all right, thank you, I'm covered.
Chair, I'm going to start by just briefly taking you through what we're going to present to you. As you've indicated, the committee is new, so we took a bit of a liberty and added some extra slides just to try and give some background and a little bit of information. It obviously doesn't suffice enough, but to try and assist members who are new to the committee in relation to that. So we're going to take you through the vision, mission, values, and functional purpose of the CCMA, and then we're going to deal with corporate governance, and the chairperson of our governing body will deal with that section. And then we'll take you through our strategy as our performance management and what we've set for our APP in the year ahead. And then we've put in a few issues in relation to our delivery and the challenges that we are facing, and then also putting up front the changing operating environment that CCMA finds itself in relation to labour market. If that's in order, we will proceed, and I will hand over to the chair, who will start.
Thank you, Madam. Okay. Briefly, what we have got first is the vision of the CCMA. As it is put there, we would like to be the premier dispute prevention, management, as well as dispute resolution organization. We see the vision leading to the mission, which is the purpose of the CCMA, to promote social justice and economic development in the world of work, and to be the best dispute management and dispute resolution organization trusted by all our social partners. The values on which the organization stands are respect, excellence, accountability, diversity, integrity, and transparency. I will hand over to the director to deal with the section that will be dealing with the mandatory statutory functions of the institution.
Thank you very much for to do this. Just to briefly take the members through, what we set out in these slides are the mandatory functions that are contained in the Labour Relations Act that the CCMA must attend to. And that is, the CCMA must conciliate workplace disputes. It must arbitrate disputes that remain unresolved after conciliation. It must facilitate the establishment of workplace forums and statutory councils. It's also obliged to compile and publish information and statistics about its activities, and also to consider applications for accreditation and subsidy of both bargaining councils and private agencies. It's also obliged to establish picketing rules, and if obviously so requested by the parties, and then, very importantly, to provide training and advice in relation to any collective bargaining structure, workplace restructuring, employment equity challenges, or any programs in relation to dispute prevention. Dispute prevention being preventing disputes from coming to the CCMA and trying to find a good way of resolving them at the workplace. I'll then move to what are considered the discretionary functions of the CCMA, i.e. in the law it says we may do these things. And that is that the CCMA must supervise ballots for unions and employees' organizations. They may provide training information relating to the primary objectives of the Labour Relations Act. They must advise a party to a dispute about the procedure that they need to follow in relation to either a workplace dispute or in relation to the Act itself or coming to the CCMA. And then the important one that everybody's talking about, and that's Oxford, to resolve a dispute that has not been referred to the CCMA, and that might be in relation to a national strike that's happening, or something of that nature, if they think it's of importance. And then we must also publish guidelines in relation to how people can use the CCMA, how people should do things, including rules, which are the rules of conduct, like in a court, but they're more generic and more permissive in relation to the work of the CCMA. I'm then going to just briefly outline to everybody what processes in the CCMA, how they follow a process. So this next diagram demonstrates to everyone how a right to dispute would be addressed. Now, Chair, I'm going to just try to state a few of those things in case people don't understand what I mean between a right to dispute and an interest dispute. Bearing in mind that we obviously know that we want to try and help the committee to understand. Okay, all right. So a right to dispute would be a dispute that relates to an issue at the workplace in relation to misconduct or incapacity or maybe for ill health. That's a very brief summary of what that would be. So if you had a dispute in relation to your rights, which are set out in the Labour Relations Act, you would refer the matter, if you see the left diagram in the blue, to the CCMA. The CCMA could set aside for a con-arb process, which is conciliation and arbitration on the same day, or the seeking may set aside for conciliation first, and then if it's unresolved, to go to arbitration. Now, the reason that we set out the con-arb process is that part of what the legislature yourselves have enjoined us to do is to be speedy in our processes. So often, if we can't settle a matter at a conciliation immediately, we can go straight into arbitration. So a worker can come to the CCMA and have their case resolved on the same day, if it's possible. And then we have to give an arbitration award. In terms of the law, we have to give that arbitration award delivered to the parties in 14 days. However, you may have a matter where it's more complicated or the parties specifically request that they want to first come for a conciliation because they believe that they might be able to resolve the matter through mediation and we should give proper time for that mediation. And so they spend time in relation to the conciliation. And then only if I'm able to resolve through conciliation, and I'm going to show you all the statistics in relation to that a little bit later in the presentation, it would go to arbitration. Arbitration, while it is a legal process, it's only a quasi-judicial process. It's not a formal process like a court of law, and the commissioners are supposed to assist parties, especially unrepresented parties, to make sure they can present their case. And we are allowed to give evidence, bring witnesses, ask some questions, and do closing arguments, but it is not as formal and formalistic as, for example, in a court case. And I know everybody's watching a certain court case on TV at the moment, it's not like that. Because you're sitting around a table where everybody's together and it's more informal. And the intention of that is so it's not intimidating to anybody who's coming. Once the commissioner has heard all the evidence, and we try and make commissioners do that as quickly as possible, so they don't have a case dragging on for days and days and days, the commissioner then has 14 days to give the arbitration award. There are certain circumstances if the commissioners have lots of evidence and it's been for lots of days. In terms of the law, they can apply to the director, which is mean, to get that award, that time extended. But we try not to let commissioners do that because it then doesn't ensure that we deliver on our mandate, which is speedy and cost-effective dispute resolution. There are certain cases in relation to conciliation. If they are unresolved, they don't go to the CCMA for arbitration unless the parties agree. And a good example would be if it's a retrenchment matter. We would conciliate that matter, but if it's more than two people who are being retrenched, that would be referred to the Labour Court. As you can see on the far right column, we've got the Labour Court, and it then would go to the Labour Court for adjudication. And at the present moment, that also applies to many unfair labour practice disputes, and that relates to disputes which are about mainly issues of equity, issues in relation to harassment at the workplace, unfair promotion, things of that nature. Also in relation to, for example, being dismissed in relation, being a shop steward and being victimized by your employer if you are exercising your rights in terms of a trade union. So those would then go to the Labour Court once the CCMA has attempted to try and conciliate the matter. And then the Labour Court would adjudicate, as we've got the adjudication, it's different to arbitration. That would be a formal court case where you would have probably legal representation or you may have a trade union representing you in relation to that. And then the court would then give a judgment in relation to that. That obviously doesn't, the CCMA doesn't have any control over the process once it's gone out to the CCMA, but it would go to the Labour Court and sometimes it does take a bit of time in relation to getting resolution for that. So that's just a very brief summary of how cases would work in relation to disputes of rights. And I'm taking to as the law exists at the moment, in the amendments that are currently being debated and before and being defended to, there are some slight changes to some of these, which we could talk about a little bit later. I'll go to the next slide. The dispute resolution process, and the CCMA says DR, we mean dispute resolution. And that is for interest disputes. Now, these are the disputes that everybody knows a lot about, and these are disputes which are, when you've got an interest and it's related to your wage dispute. The main issue is that you've got a demand that's not a right in the workplace, and that's in relation to a wage dispute. So you would have an interest dispute. We would hopefully and encourage that you've negotiated at your workplace first, and you've tried to find resolution if you've got a recognized trade union, which would be encouraged, obviously, and with your employer, and you've tried to bargain. But if you're unable to resolve that and you've followed your internal dispute resolution processes or any other process that you've agreed to with the employer as a trade union or the employer's agreed with the trade union, you would then declare a dispute to the CCMA. And the CCMA would be set up for to do a conciliation in relation to that. Now, that would be dealt with differently to the kind of conciliations I showed you a little bit earlier where you've got an individual dismissal case. Conciliation in relation to a wage dispute would take much more time, and we'd allocate probably a specialist commissioner who deals with that. And my colleague, Mr. Superdarkia, is responsible for all of that in relation to the CTMA. And we would then set that up, and the parties would come, and we would try and conciliate the matter. Now, obviously, if it's a big matter of major importance, we would not just do it in one day. We would give certain time. But the CTMA only has 30 days in which to try and conciliate that matter, which is very important to remember in the context of that sometimes people say the CTMA gives everybody licenses to go on strike. The law says that the CTMA, when the matter is referred, must conciliate the matter within 30 days or issue a certificate which says that the matter remains unresolved. Or alternatively, if the parties agree, you can agree to extend those 30 days and then you can continue to mediate for another 30 days or 1 week or whatever the parties have agreed. But if they won't agree to that, the commissioner signing that certificate then gives the trade union the right to go on strike. And that certificate is what people refer to as CTMA licensing workers to go on strike, but really it's the law that permits us to do that in relation to that. Obviously, I'll talk a little bit later about the kind of intervention the CTMA can do once the workers are on strike. Just as an aside, trade unions are then usually, depending what they've got in agreement, but they are obliged to give formal notice to the employer of their intention to go on strike, and they should give 48 hours notice. And they can hold that strike certificate for a month and then give the notice. They can hold it for a day and then give the notice. That's also within their discretion. But they have to give the employer notice of the intention to go on strike. Now, I've got another word written in there which is not often talked about, and that is the lockout. It's important to remember, and can I just flag to everybody, that Section 23 of our Constitution protects the right to strike of South African workers. And then employers have what's called the recourse to lockout. So if they're unable to, at a certain point, to resolve the strike, employers may give notice to workers often at a reasonable amount of negotiation and a reasonable amount of process to say to them that they've made an offer, they think their offer is reasonable, and as a result of that, they're giving them 48 hours notice or whatever it is, but usually 48 hours, to accept the offer and come back to work. And if they fail to accept that offer, they then go to effect dismissals, mass dismissals of the workforce. And that's really one of two of the ways that a matter like that can be resolved. And then I'm now giving you a very brief walk through the dispute resolution process on the CTMA. I'm going to hand back to the chair to talk about the corporate governance of the CTMA.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The governing body of the CCMA, we have got the pictures of the people who are making up the governing body. It is the independent chairperson, which is myself, and then we have got three representatives per constituency as per the tripartite arrangement that we have got, three from labor, three from government, and three from organized business. I will make mention of the names of the people because as you were saying earlier, it may be necessary for us to do so as we are introducing the information to some of the people who may not be familiar with the information. Apart from my picture and that of the director, Nerine Khan, I would make mention then of the names of the other nine people that we see on that picture. I will quickly look at the back so that I can follow the names as they are shown. Starting from the top row of three people, the first one that we see is Mr. Monase, who is representing organized business. Next to him is Mr. Moyane, who is also representing organized business. The next picture is that of Ms. Ransot, who is also a representative for organized business. Both Mr. Monate and Ms. Ransot are present today. The second row of three, we have got the first one just below the picture of Mr. Monate. We have got Mr. Begin Chalijali, who is representing organized labor. He is from COSATU. The next one is Mr. Krobler, who is representing organized labor, FEDUSA, the Federation. And the next picture to him, just below that of Ms. Ransot, is a government representative, Ms. Mamashela, that last bottom row of the three pictures, we have got just below that of Mr. Jali Jali, Mr. Mkadipi, who is representing government, and next to him in the center, we have got the picture of Mr. Moloto, who is representing organized labor. He is from NACTU. And the last one is Mr. Ian Masun, who is representing a government. That would be the 10 people that make up the governing body, with Ms. Khan as the ex-official member because she is the director. The Commission for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration, it is an independent statutory body that is made up of the 10 people as I have highlighted. The governing body has been set up in terms of Section 116 of the Labour Relations Act. It is led by an independent non-executive chairperson and the representatives from government, organized labour and organized business. The members of the governing body are appointed through a process that is managed by NEDLAC and by the Minister of Labour. The governing body is the accounting authority and the director is the accounting officer in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. And the governing body charter clearly and concisely sets out the roles, duties and responsibilities of the governing body as well as any salient corporate governance principles. The GD appoints the director in terms of the Section 118 of the Labour Relations Act, and this is a responsibility that they may not delegate. And then, of course, the director fulfills the functions of a chief executive officer. The LRA specifically tasks the GD with the appointment of the commissioners, the setting up of the conditions of service for those commissioners. And these are responsibilities that may not be delegated, including the appointment of the director and the appointment or the removal of the commissioners, as well as the deposit or the investment of surplus money, as well as accreditation and subsidy functions. The LRA in Section 122 enjoins the GB, the governing body, to establish committees to assist the CCMA and contract any person or agency to do work or perform any function of the CCMA, that is in terms of Section 124. Including the accreditation of the bargaining councils as well as the private agencies. I now will hand over once again to the director to proceed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this diagram basically sets out how the CTMA functions and its accountability and to try and contextualize it for the committee members. So as you can see at the top, the executive authority is the Minister of Labour. And then the governing body is the accounting authority reporting ultimately through to the Department of Labour and the Minister of Labour and also accountable to Parliament. The governing body then has set up committees, and those are four specific committees and a fifth one, which is the Audit Committee. And those committees are the Governance, Social and Ethics Committee, the Accreditation and Subsidy Committee, the Human Resources Committee, and the Finance and Risk Committee. A governing body member chairs each of these committees, although there may be representatives in those committees from other social partners who are nominated basically because of their knowledge in relation to that. The audit committee is obviously seen as independent because they have to give assurance to the governing body, and that's why they're represented as independent in the slide. Also contained herein is the essential services committee. In the current legislation, CTMA is responsible for the administration of and the support to the Essential Services Committee in relation to a secretariat role in administration.
but that has been read in the new amendments that are coming up, that's slightly changed, or quite significantly changed. In the current moment, the chairperson of the committee, who is appointed by the Minister of Labour, is Advocate of Rio Bono, and he assists in relation to that. I'm then going to move on to addressing strategy and performance. The CTNA's current strategy is dealt with in the following slide, and we need to address and update everybody in relation to that. As we've taken you through, our strategy is guided by our vision, mission, and values of the organization, and then we have goals, strategic objectives, and key performance areas. Our current strategy is the CFPB strategy, which was crafted from our previous strategies, and to make sure that we insisted on getting business continuity and moving forward. The plan was put together both internally and externally with our stakeholders. The plan is for 5 years, 2011 to 2015. We actually just started the final year of that 5-year plan. We've got those key performance areas and targets, and I'll take you through some of them a little bit later in the presentation. But what's important is that how the strategic plan is devised also determines how we allocate resources and how the organization performs and how the CTMA manages performance management in relation to that. The plan also sets out what we should do, who should be organized, and what should happen in relation to each staff member, and they set out teams to try and deliver in relation to the mandate. The next slide, I'm going to try and take you through carefully how the goals and strategic objectives work so the members can understand. So the first goal, which is the one that's set up on the top there in green, we will position the CTMA to impartially promote social justice and economic development in the world of work. And then the objective there is to enrich the role of the CTMA in the labour market. Now, each of these you're going to see a little bit later in the performance plan that we've listed out and how they work. So I'm trying to show you how the plan was developed and what the key issues were, and then how they translate into the performance plan and the scorecard of how we measure our performance. The second goal is that we will deliver professional, user-friendly quality services with speed. And that, as you can see, going back, for example, to the diagrams I had earlier about talking about speedy dispute resolution. So we're trying to show the link in relation to the mandate from the legislature. The objectives there are to build skills to achieve professionalism for us, and then to deliver excellent service rooted in social justice, ensuring a balance between quantity and quality. Just to remind the members, I indicated that we have to schedule conciliations in 30 days, we have to give out arbitration awards in 14 days, we're required to make sure arbitrations once applied for are scheduled and heard within 90 days. So that's just trying to put up a measure in relation to that. But in doing that, you can't just make sure you just do it, you must also make sure you give a quality service to the members. So that's why we need to balance in relation to that. The next area is we will maintain organizational effectiveness and strive for continuous improvement. That's the goal in relation to that. And that area has three objectives, and that's to enhance and entrench internal processes and systems for optimal deployment of resources, make sure the organization is functioning effectively and we utilize the budget allocated to us accordingly, and to make sure that the next one is align the structure that will enable optimal implementation of the strategy. So building on making sure that we have set up and enhanced our systems, we have a structure that delivers in relation to that to make sure the strategy can be delivered on, and then to make sure we've got a good organizational culture that supports the delivery of our mandate. We conceptualize all of this into a document, which is a scorecard, and I have no doubt we'll be coming back shortly to talk to us about the annual report and the outcomes of the financial year. And so we do it in relation to a scorecard and a robot or traffic light system, and that is red, obviously not achieved, amber nearly achieved, or caution with an explanation, and green in relation to that. So all those objectives are now taken into the scorecard. Those items that I had in the bottom row, they put there, and then we put the overall score. I put them in green here because at the moment we actually are in green, and so we're quite proud of ourselves, but we'll talk to you about that later in the year. I'm now going to move into talking about the year ahead and what we've planned. The first area we're going to talk about is, because we can't do any of this work unless we have our budget appropriately allocated, and I'm going to hand over to our Chief Financial Officer, Tommy.
Thank you, Director. The slide is showing the budgeted income and expenditure. This is showing in terms of the income that was allocated in terms of the grant being 687 million rand. And from there, what we do is we put, based on our cash flow forecasting, the money that will not be used in probably the next 2 to 3 months in investment accounts in the financial institutions. From that point of view, we budgeted an interest of 34 million rand because we're usually looking at the estimate of 5% that we average can get in the money market. 6.7 million rand relates to other income, which is generally from the other services that we render to the public, both could be the unions, could be employers, and employees, and general public, etc. So that is the amount that we disclose there as other income. Total then coming to 728 million rand from that income. We then split between the capital expenditure and the operational expenditure, which we call CapEx or capital expenditure. The capital expenditure is split into two, where you have the normal operations, which is for the normal existing of the semi operation, and the capital expenditure, which is allocated for the project. As you can see, that we've highlighted or explained what type of project we are referring to. And in terms of the application that we did to the National Treasury via our Department of Labor, we applied for additional funding with regards to the Big Four projects, one being the labor law amendment, obviously taking into account the impact that we'll have in the existing operations of the CCMA. The second project being rollout of the web-enabled case management system, which will enable users out there to be able to access in other areas besides physically coming to city offices to access the services. Could be centers such as the Department of Labor and the bargaining councils and so forth. The third project is the establishment of the employment security unit. And the last one being opening new offices as we see the need of expanding and being able to be more accessible in the country. So we opened the Welcome office and one in the Val. The next slide just shows the split on how we look at how the allocated budget is split, of which 40% goes towards the case disbursement, being obviously the core activity for the CCMA in terms of case management, and 32% is towards salaries and benefits, and 27% is reinvested back into the operations in the organization, and about 1% is towards subsidy that relates to the subsidy to the bargaining council. The next slide is showing the overview of the 2014 budget and the MTF, which is Medium Term Expenditure Framework Estimate. This was submitted, this slide was submitted as part of the submission on the strategic planning and the annual performance plan. The slide is just showing the split in terms of the budget programs where you have admin, institutional development, corporate governance, and social services. And it shows, as you can see, the figures on your left, which are the audited financial statements up till year ending March 2013, and the estimates column refers to the budget 2014, and the last 2015, 16, and 17 being the budget estimate. Now, if you look at that particular budget, you'll see that the increase, you pick up an increase from 2014 to 2015, and that is more in terms of percentages, about 15%, and that's more with regard to the project that I've mentioned that we received additional funding to work on those four particular projects. The funding that we had was for a 3-year period, starting in 2013, 14, and 15.
So that's why we pick up an increase in some of the percentages to be able to allocate it. And then going forward from 2016 and 2017, you can see that the increase there is more around the CPI, in fact, which is the CPI guideline that we receive from the National Treasury. And in terms of our budget, we budget for break-even, as you can see, from 2015 to 2017. That is the financial that we have. And then I'll take questions with him.
Chair, then I'll continue, and I'll see you take questions again.
Are you done with the presentation?
No, not yet.
No, sir. Take the questions, I will give you the questions at the end. Just continue giving your presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, then moving on, in the following slide, I think it's slide 21, that we have now put up in detail the APP for the CTMA, and I took you through the strategic goals, the strategic objectives, and those are set out in the slide. In order not to go through each individual item, we've highlighted certain ones and just flagged them, and obviously we'll take questions on engagement in relation to them. So on the next slide, I'm going to address, those key items there which are highlighted in blue, because we thought that those would be probably of the most interest to the members of the committee. And that is firstly dealing with the promotion of employment security. In the last year, we've seen significant amounts of retrenchments, and it's been important for us to look at how do we deal with the promotion of employment security. So we've established, and part of the special budget that's an allocation that we got from Treasury that the CFO was just talking about goes to this area, and we've really highlighted trying to work in the area of retrenchments and facilitations and job saving, and making sure that we have a whole program in relation to that. We have set up various areas of work in relation to that. The sections in the law that deal with that are section 189 and section 189A, where we have ensured that commissioners are trained to properly assist employers when they recognize and identify workers to be retrenched and go through a long facilitation process. This is a process that we would obviously not just give a warning to. We would try and give as much time as possible, and we have specialist commissioners who are involved in this. We've also linked in relation to our other sister departments, for example, Productivity SA, who, if a commissioner can identify that there are work challenges in relation to the employer, we've done some joint work to try and actually assist the employer to improve its profitability. This has also been done together on many occasions with the Train and Rail Scheme, which was a scheme set up by government to try and assist workers in the interim if they are in a situation where they don't have to lose their jobs but their employer can't pay them while they're restructuring. They would go on specific training courses and they would receive a stipend from the state while the employer continued mostly to pay their pension and medical aid. We've had quite significant success in that, and I will show you some details in relation to that. 1.6 in relation to our plan is obviously to participate in the process of amending the relevant employment legislation. We're requested by the social partners and NEDLAC. And again, I highlight this area because the additional money we receive from Treasury is in relation to implementing those amendments and the processes that we've been going to do that, and actually reorganizing the operating effects of the CTMA and the work in the CTMA in relation to that. Then 1.7 is also the area that I'm sure everybody's interested in, and that deals in relation to where I talked about the interest disputes earlier, and that is about assisting, supporting, promoting the quality of collective bargaining in South Africa. So it's not just about everybody coming to the CTMA when they've got a wage dispute. It's about supporting it in advance, assisting people in advance, trying to work in relation to that. And on the next slide, we have highlighted specifically some of the work that we've been doing with specific parties, either in relation to collective bargaining or conducting verification exercises which are able to then resolve disputes. And then following on from that, a very effective way is either before or after a strike to have very specific facilitated task teams. An example that I will list out here is in the glass sector, which arose out of the dispute last year. My colleague, Mr. Sivadar here, has been facilitating because the sector is in crisis and it's that might be closing down, and there could be job losses. And he's involved in facilitating a process to try and assist both the employer and the employees in finding ways to make sure that the sector is sustainable. And this also involves working with the Department of Trade and Industry and the Economic Development Department. So we're expanding quite significantly in relation to the work that we're doing, and in that process, obviously making sure that we try and assist with labour market stability. I flagged the item as well in relation to item 1.6, which was in relation to the labour law amendments, and the CCMA has been working very hard in relation to implementing those amendments, and we've had a national task team that's set up in relation to doing that. We have picked out certain areas of those amendments, and we specifically trained specific commissioners for that, and those particular areas relate to organisational rights disputes and section 21 of the law. I mentioned earlier that the essential services regime has quite significantly changed in relation to the CCMA and its governance processes, and we're training commissioners in relation to that. Then the area that we've also picked out and identified to train specialist commissioners and commissioners in general relates to temporary employment services. Those are all disputes which are contained in the Labour Relations Act. But in addition to that, the other amendments that are coming through also affect the CCMA, and in particular, the amendments to the Employment Equity Act, which, as you recall, I said to you that cases relate to any kind of discrimination go to the Labour Court. There's quite a significant change in relation to that, where the CCMA will be in a position to arbitrate many of those disputes. And in particular, there will be arbitrating disputes that relate to equal pay for work of equal value. We have developed training. We have trained all our commissioners more than once. We have trained all our staff internally. We've developed guidelines for them on how they could implement the training. We have obviously worked with all our social partners in relation to interpretation. The governing body is also tasked at this time with the amendments to also re-look at the rules of the CCMA. The governing body has been doing that, and those rules are really nearly ready for promulgation. We've also worked with the Department of Labour in updating the regulations and forms. And we will, as soon as or if and when the law comes into being, have a communication advocacy program very specifically working together with the Department of Labour, depending on which area of work. I will then move on to strategic objective 2, where again we've highlighted just one area, and that is a very exciting area that the CCMA has been involved in, and that is we have a training program, we develop training and we train our commissioners internally. But there's been a very high demand over the last year for the work of the CCMA, and we have now entered into partnerships with various universities, which is indicated on the next slide, and we have now, in that process, made sure that our training is more accessible to many people in South Africa. As you can see, we've listed the universities up there, and we've tried to make sure that spread is across the whole country, and we believe it's important to building skills in the labour market, developing capacity in the labour relations practice industry, and also will assist people to access our training more easily in relation to that. Moving on to the next strategic objective, which is number 3, and where we've highlighted, I'm just highlighting 3.2, which is improving the accessibility of CCMA services to users. Some of you will recall that the CCMA has originally only started with one office in each region, and we've had a very concerted program to make sure our users, our employees and our employers have better access to our services. And this is not only by putting up bricks and mortar offices, it's by various means. So on the next slide we can indicate that that's across the country where we have all offices or departments. We've also linked with the Department of Labour in relation to our case management system. And our case management system is now accessible and can be accessed by anybody who goes into a Department of Labour service centre, which also works with the system with accessibility. We're also, in our accessibility drive, looking at using more and more modern technology, which in some areas will work, but we need to make sure that we service all the clients of the CCMA who have different access to technology. In the bottom there, we're indicating, which I think is significant, that from in 1997, the CCMA started in that financial year and had 67,000 cases. In the financial year that's just ended, 2013-14, we had 170,673 cases. Firstly, that is in relation to the fact that caseload rises depending on what's going on in the labour market. But secondly, what does happen is that when we open more and more provincial offices, and as you can see that we now have 21, people and workers who may not have access to services on the CTMA before do actually come to CTMA and now refer cases. So it has a benefit to the people that obviously increase the caseload of the CTMA in relation to this. I'm moving on in the next key performance area, and that is to improve the quality of service delivery for speedy speed resolution. If you'll recall earlier when I was taking everybody through the diagram of how the Labour Relations Act works, I indicated the time frame. This is the target and the area that measures that. And if you will look on the next slide, we summarise our operating efficiencies and our improvements or not, as the case may be, over the last couple of years. I think the significant ones to look at and to help the committee to understand is if you go down to the middle where it says later wards commissioner, and you will see there that we've really improved that commissioners don't give us awards late anymore. And then in terms of the law that says that we must send it out in 14 days, not just the commissioner must give the award in, but we must make sure the parties actually receive it in 14 days. And that's been a challenge for us in the last few years and was raised in relation to an audit. And while in 2011, 47% of the awards were sent late to parties, now we can say none are sent late to parties. We've managed that process very significantly. The other area that would be of interest is the fact that the CTMA targets making sure it resolves and settles disputes, because that's the intention of the Act, to try and find the party with each other. And currently our international settlement rate is at 75%, which we're quite proud of in relation to that. And then the item above that, the CTMA must make sure the conciliations are heard within 30 days. As you can see, for many years now, all our conciliations have been heard within the 30 days, and it's 0% from 2010 to 2014. Just flagging a few areas there. Then, just for members and also just because members are new, this just indicates the kind of cases that the CTMA currently receives. So as you can see, the very high target there, that's the last 2 years compared. The main area of our work is unfair dismissal cases, and then you'll see unfair labour practices is 8%. And then what's interesting is mutual interest and collective bargaining, about 5% together, but often the part that everybody remembers for us. And then severance pay, which relates to specific areas of work, is 2%. Other kind of cases we get in, just a quick summary. And then capacity building, and that goes to our dispute prevention and management work, to try and get training and assist people in bringing cases correctly to the CTMA. Then also what would be of interest is that the cases that are referred to the CTMA by sector, and there we can see that at the moment, and it's risen significantly in the last year, and our business professional services have increased dramatically. But you will then see that the domestic worker sector and mining are also quite a high area of work, security and always retail. Bearing in mind that we, but just to remind members of the committee, that this doesn't affect cases in relation to bargaining councils in sectors such as medical, engineering, chemical, where they would have bargaining councils and their cases would be reflected differently. This is a sector that's come to the CTMA as we stand now. Moving on to the next goal, which is goal 3. And just highlighting one area, which is 4.3, which is a significant point that we wanted to just point out to the committee, and that is to make sure that we've managed the risks of the organisation, and we have that as top of the mind for all our staff at all points, to make sure that they understand what the requirements in relation to risk are, and that we manage the risk effectively. Also in this goal is the issue of promoting skills development, employment equity, and women in commissioner and leadership positions in the organisation. And we just briefly put up our internal slides in relation to that, and that indicates the employees in the CTMA through gender, and in the next slide indicates the employees in the CTMA per race. Then moving on, and that is an area that we want to emphasise, which is that we want to make sure we have a good organisational culture. We've recently run a very successful values campaign. We've done a lot of work in relation to that. And we also do a lot of work in trying to ensure that people come to the CTMA and build workplace relations. There's just a few examples of people coming to workshops, commissions facilitating at that. For example, some of you will remember towards the end of last year there was a strike at Sun City, which we then conducted a facilitation process with the employer and the trade union to try and ensure that there was more stability. And these are all just examples. Most of the pictures here are in relation to that. And they refer specifically to our dispute management and prevention work that we do as an organization. I'm then going to move just on to delivering on our challenges and our delivery excellence. Pictures you see on the front here is a very exciting initiative we have, which we're working with our International Labour Organization. And as last year, we hosted a summit in relation to decent work for the contract cleaning sector. And together there, we're trying to ensure that we can assist with the bargaining processes and the working conditions. The Department of Labour is also involved in relation to that. And that has been funded by the ILO. When the governing body evaluated the work that the city mayor is doing, they also specifically looked at looking at the new strategy that we have to start considering beginning in April next year. And the first thing that they did is look at the broader perspective and the broader issues that the CCMA is delivering to. And we then set up these pillars in relation to the mayors that the CCMA may do and how the CCMA may assist in relation to the labour market and work going forward. And this document has been the guiding document, which moves to the next slide, where we're just working towards shaping the strategy of the CCMA for 2020, because we need to set a new guide in relation to that. So as you can see, we've got delivering on the broad mandate on the right and all the areas that we're working on towards there. And then we're looking at how do we shape our operating context, which is with stakeholder engagement, research, and our scenario planning, and looking for that to try and then guide how does strategy and performance management of the CCMA move forward from what we're presenting to you here. And we need to look at what that is, the impact that they have, and the indicators that we have from the state. What the areas we're looking at also in relation to this is what is the public value that the CCMA gives to the organization, and what is the public value that we can give to the society given our mandate from the legislature. And so we need to look at the innovation and best practice of that, how we do have service delivery excellence, and the user focus that we have on that. That's just a map at the moment, which is not finalized, but it's working towards what we're doing with the governing body at the moment with the chairperson in relation to strategy development. And I think it would be remiss of me not to come to the committee and tell and raise with you the changing environment that the CCMA finds itself in the last few years. So I wanted to just take you through a couple of issues in relation to that. I think the key thing we need to look at is that the CCMA's role since 2011 has increasingly focused on looking at various issues and disputes at workplaces, and that is verification exercises in relation to trade union membership, looking at representativity and trying to ensure that at workplaces trade unions are working together in terms of what the law intends. In that, there's challenges in relation to the rivalry that trade unions have, strikes, and obviously the demands that we see coalescing from workplaces and communities, and the CCMA often finds itself mixed up in that. We've tried to respond with flexibility and be decisive, and we've intervened, and we haven't stood back and said this is not the area we should deal with. We've tried to make sure that we assist and support the members of the community and obviously the workers that go with that. We've also tried to work, as I indicated in the earlier slide, but to have specifically with social partners to ensure that they have strong collective bargaining functions. We've given lots of talks, presentations, and training, and well as to ensure that there's a social dialogue system of working effectively to try and see if we can assist them in the changing environment that we see at workplaces in relation to trade union issues. What do we think are the causes of this? And what do we think we need to do about it? We think that the societal fault lines are there, and they're coming out in workplace disputes. Those are the inequality, poverty, and unemployment. There's impatience amongst workers on the streets and on the factory floor to see this resolved. People are not aware of what's going on internally and externally in the labour market and in the environment, and they don't understand the issues that are challenging them and how they can be resolved, and they're not utilising the systems that are set up for that. Huge challenges in relation to employers managing of industrial relations, not making industrial relations strategic and not seeing it as an important area that you should focus on in your workplace, and maybe even outsourcing that. And as a result of this, it doesn't have meaningful engagement, and that there isn't meaningful trust in the workplace, and that leads to lots of conflict in the workplace. And the trust that we see in the labour market we might have seen historically 5-10 years ago has started to break down because of those things. many workers have lost confidence in the mechanisms of peace in the labour market and the intentions that the Act requires. And we need to look at processes in relation to that. The labour market is, of course, fractious and is unsettled as a result of that. And the challenges that we see also are the constant squeeze of profit-making at the expense of industrial relations. And then there are bargaining processes that haven't been updated, that haven't been effectively dealt with, and are maybe inefficient and don't actually address all the challenges that people might have envisaged 10 years ago, let's say 18 years ago when the Labour Relations Act came in, and we need to look at those issues. That is a very, very high-level summary of a presentation that I sometimes give for 2 hours, but I wanted to try and give the committee some ideas about the thinking that the CCMA has in relation to the causes in the labour market. Chair, with that, that is the management committee of the CCMA, and we would like to say thank you very much for listening.
Very much for the input, and I think all the members who I knew, myself included, by now, after this presentation, at least you have an idea of what is going on, what is that you are doing, and thank you very much for the good work. But I will give over to the members to ask questions, clarity, concerns. I just want to acknowledge the presence of the FDG. Thank you for being patient with us. You've been here since Tuesday till today. Despite the fact that it was a short notice, but at least we were able to be here and deliver with the entity. I appreciate that. Members, can I see all the hands? Okay. Honorable colleagues, Honorable America, Lodi West, Juane, Van Kansi, and the last one is Honorable Mankashe, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll get straight to it. The pages on our presentation are numbered, unfortunately, but the presentation at first, you have got a diagram illustrating sort of a flow chart of the organizational structure, how you as a CCMA relates to Parliament and the executive authority and where the governing body sits and so on. So it's page 13 on the little, sorry, the pages aren't numbered in our presentation, but the slides are numbered. It's slide number 13, I think. And there's a reference there to the Essential Services Committee. I see in the media some debate about the Eskom situation and the fact that one of the large trade unions, NUMSA, is going out of strike and 9,000 of those workers are working at Eskom. And certainly some of Eskom's operations, one would presume, are in essential services. Electricity gets cut off, the whole country comes to a standstill. But if I remember correctly, going back about 2.5 years to when I was on this committee before, we were given to understand that in a particular industry that is an essential service, not all workers are essential workers, and that there's some sort of system of delineating which workers are essential and which workers are not. And perhaps you could just explain how that system works. It's the actual system has not been debate publicly much. You just hear those are essential workers, but what does that mean? There's a system, and I just don't totally understand how the system works at this stage. Then in terms of your case disbursements on, okay, this slide doesn't have a number. Budget expenditure distribution 2014-2015 is the heading. They talk about case disbursements of 40%. What exactly are those case disbursements? 40% of the money goes to case disbursements. sure. That sounds quite serious for an industry which is large. And then just two last questions. The one you talk about the very last, the second to last slide, key underlying causes of the changing environment. The last one talks about adherence to inefficient bargaining processes. Perhaps you could just give us a little bit more information. What do you mean by inefficient bargaining processes? I'm aware that labor laws and practices in the industry need to be updated from time to time, but what kinds of practices are we seeing that are inefficient? And then finally, just a question regarding the pattern of strike and the involvement of the CCMA. We've seen in the media, even the Minister of the new Minister of Minerals saying that he doesn't think the CCMA did enough or did the appropriate thing. Can I just have a comment? Is the CCMA set up to deal with that sort of problem? And do you feel that's unfair or fair criticism in terms of your work in mediating these massive industrial strikes? Thank you, Tepes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Director, if one look at the budget income for 2014 and 2015, there is an income classification that is called other, about 6,774,000. Could one just provide some clarity, because as an independent organization, not knowing exactly where the income is coming from, it might be perceived as compromising your independence. Second question I'd like to ask is in relation to the establishment of job savings units and employment security. The question arises out of a concern in terms of, I've listened to what was stated in the presentation, that's been considerably successful in securing saving jobs, and it also emanates mandate from section 189A. The question is that who needs to initiate your intervention with regard to assistance? Does it always have to come from the employer, or through your dispute resolution mechanisms, you get early warning that there may be a crisis in a particular industry, then ends your sort of proactive intervention. Furthermore, this linked to your own success in terms of dispute resolution. You also have a spot to strategic objectives to look at the support, promote, and enhance the quality of collective bargaining. And yet, particularly, you make reference to collective bargaining improvement processes piloted. You know, could you provide more detail with regard to what processes? Because within certain bargaining councils, particularly in the public sector and local government, the success rate in terms of dispute resolutions with regard to settlement in particular is very, very low compared to the CCMA's settlement success rate, and in what manner, and I know it is the purvey and the responsibility of the governing bodies of such bargaining councils, what initiatives that you could play in assisting those bargaining councils to improve on their success rate. After all, it is very often CCMA trade commissioners who also work at bargaining councils. And then, Madam Director, in terms of your partnership with universities in terms of developing these qualifications, is it, does it augment your own training and qualifications that you provide to commissioners, or is it additional to what you provide, or does it replace your training that you provide to commissioners? And then, Honourable Chair, that's the sum total of my questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. I want to check with you, Director. We are all having an obligation to community labor people. What role are you playing there in terms of give us the steps of the stakeholders that we have trained? Because we have a slide which indicates that you are training stakeholders. Again, what is the rate of review of the awards issued by SuperMA? On the issue of equity, can you be given a breakdown according to the various levels? And the last one, who are the beneficiaries of the 1% budget that goes to subsidies? Because the first year in your budget, 1% is paid out to the subsidy or subsidized. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you,
Thanks, Chair, and the presenters. Just two questions. As part of the follow-up to what my honorable member said, in terms of creating labor stability and peace, I just want to know the performance on this case, because that forms the core function of CCMA, even if it's in percentages. It doesn't come out clear. And that takes me to the next question around the effectiveness of our work. Because if the effectiveness of our work is not addressed through what we're intending to do, it's then a matter. Because there are always strikes, labor disputes, and all the time, which takes me to the next point. CCMA will come towards the end. As to whether when it comes in, it gives the necessary assistance or not. That's what we want to know. And just for purposes of operations, the number of offices which you are operating and how accessible are those offices? Somewhere I heard you saying there are 21, but in a country of the 9 provinces, almost 52 to 53 districts and so on, is this 21 enough given the labor intensiveness of the country? On your summary, which I should go there, a matter there which operating in a changing environment, you are saying there's been an increase in inter-union rivalry, unprotected strikes. The coal, I don't know what does that mean, of workplace and community demands. What then I'm not getting is that how do you then going to deal with this? Just that bullet number two. Because it's quite intense. It's quite intense. If there is a new dimension coming, an increase in inter-human rivalry, and what you are saying is that there's a lot of unprotected strikes, and also the community demands. Just like it in terms of how do you further
How have you dealt with the matter? Because you can't raise the ticket and leave it with us. When is actually affect your day to day wise? As I conclude, on your underlying costs, and in fact you are raising the trend, which are very serious. But on your underlying costs, I didn't pick up, because somewhere it stops direct to labor brokering, even though you are not using the term. You are saying something like squeeze of profit making, which is very close to labor brokering. So I think those chair are some of the things which one would want to know so early in the morning. And also the emphasis on your operations, because if you're not going to emphasize on your operations, so it looks like you're going to find yourselves all over. That's going to create the problem for the problems. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is to start with a complaint, concern on the with regards to the employment equity figure, the low percentage of women employed in the industry. And there's also no indication on the percentage of people with disabilities employed in this industry. If we can have an indication of vacancies within the industry relating to vacant funded posts, it will be appreciated. When we speak about training training, as they indicated that there's partnership with universities. So now we want to know if the staff members are benefiting from these partnerships with the universities and how they are benefiting. On the state of the finances, there's no indication referring to the actual state of the finances in this entity, which speaks to the audit outcomes, did they receive clean audits, unqualified, or what's actually happening in this regard. On the matter of essential services, I would like to know what effort has been made by the entity in trying to ensure that there is a minimum service level agreement in this area, because we know that employers are shying away in this area of essential services to conclude minimum service level agreements. On the case distribution by issue referring to the high level of unpaid dismissal, I would like to know what interventions are made by the entity on a regular basis to properly educate employers to reduce the number of unpaid dismissals in the workplaces. Also, there is no indication in the presentation on the publicizing of this entity, the services that they are rendering, especially with regards to rural areas, for example, through the media and community radio stations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm partly covered, but I'm interested in knowing whether the four projects that are to be rolled out have a time frame to be finished. Well, as the report now presented, that's open-ended. Again, I'm also interested in the issue of the essential services. which has been at some point in the, in particular in the public service state, since 2010, if I can remember. Remember that strike, 1 month strike, and the public service were in loggerheads with employer over this month, because there is no minimum service level agreement that is in existence. What's the role of the system may be trying to resolve this issue, because it will come back and haunt. And I heard them saying they are interested in social, in labor peace in the country. And you go and ask yourself, to which extent? And when will we see them really playing that role of maintaining labor peace in the country, when you have experienced in the recent past for 5 months a strike that has been prolonged? If they not see that thing coming, if they are 1 week, part of their duty is to maintain labor peace in the labor market. Really, are you guys in a position to strike a balance between, you know, identifying essential services that will not encroach into taking away the right of workers to strike as enshrined in the Constitution? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minda. I will allow you this time to answer the question.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'm going to answer them, but obviously I've got a delegation here and there's some members who can give more detail if that's important. So I will then say this question, I'm going to refer to that first. Okay. So can I just start, okay, the first question from Honourable Otis was on essential services. Can I just make an overall statement about essential services? And also, Commissioner Mariani at the back of the government assist me, but I don't want to get into trouble with the chairperson of the Essential Services Committee and answer questions on his behalf, but I'm aware of the issues, I'm going to answer them. I may like to suggest that we should maybe bring him one time as well, in relation to that, because a lot of questions in relation to essential services. Bearing in mind the CCMA, while we understand the role and we assist the committee, at this point, we're actually only responsible for the secretariat and ensuring that it operates correctly. But I am aware of the issues and I'm able to answer, but I just want to say I might not be able to give total detail in relation to that. Honourable Otis, you asked us, sorry, Chair.
Under you,
Chair, as it stands at the moment, the CCMA is responsible for the secretariat function of the committee, and the Essential Services Committee reports to the Minister of Labour.
Directly?
Yes, in terms of the law. But they give reports to the governing body of the CCMA.
At least if they do report to the governing body of the CCMA, you should be in a position to answer all the questions, including some members of the government.
Excuse me, Chair, I'm not able to answer the question.
Thank you.
But there's some details that I might like to have at my attempt. Yeah.
Okay. Let's allow you to proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, you asked in relation to the Essential Services Committee in relation to ESCOM. And I think the question that you asked, you wanted to be explained how it works, if I know some correct, in the fact that you've seen in the media that the Essential Services, the ESCOM is threatening to go on strike, there's certain issues, but in your understanding, it is an essential service, or some workers can go on strike and some can't. Your position in that is correct. That in all employers, essential services is set up in the process of what's called the golden thread. And what you would have to do with your workforce and in a task team with your trade union representatives is to sit down and work out what is absolutely essential in relation to the workforce to keep the essential services workers going and to keep the business going. So can I use an example that maybe some of us would understand easier, and that is in a hospital. The gentleman who greets you at the door or the receptionist, that is not essential to life and death in relation to a hospital. The International Labour Organization has got special delegations in relation to how essential services work and what you should look at in relation to that. It's around affecting life and limb, affecting the security of the country, affecting health and safety and things of that nature. So you would then sit down and work out what is essential. So obviously you need a nurse to be on standby, you need doctors in the operating room, you need people to be able to get certain services, but you may not need the people to necessarily give food to the patients. I'm using as an example, okay, in relation to that. So the workers that are working in the service that actually is important, I'm just using health because it's easy for everybody to understand, but the workers that are working in that in order to maintain the life of the individual, because that's what essential services is. Essential services is are essential services workers. So the nurse in the hospital, the assistant nurse possibly, the doctors, the person giving the anesthetic in the operating room, anything of that nature would be seen as an essential service in relation to that. But the receptionist, the people filling out the card, maybe charging people, the pharmacist would be an essential services person because they have to give up the medication in relation to that. So you would have had agreement in relation to that. And then, and as what I think Honourable Natasha asked me about that, and that is around minimum service, you would then agree what are the actual essential workers that have to work to keep that service going. Likewise, in Eskom, as I understand it, you would have to have the minimum amount of workers as artisans to keep the electrical power station working. But there may be certain areas that are not essential, like I'm describing, the security guards, the receptionists, the general cleaners, but they all fall under the same area in relation to that. So to answer the question, that is how, in a very brief lesson, you would identify who an essential services committee worker is. I mean, an essential services worker is in terms of the law. It's somebody who has to maintain the services. And a good example would be that they exist anyway from the Labor Relations Act, but they're still not allowed. And that is security issues, army in time of crisis. So those that you would say who is the most important person to keep that going. It's similar for water. In relation to water, you've got to say who are the important people to make sure that water comes in, water is purified and it's distributed out to the sanitary homes that are required. It wouldn't necessarily be the person who works at the front desk or even maybe the assistant person who assists the person on testing things every day and then maybe in a period of time be able to make certain compromises in relation to that. So in relation to setting up the essential services, you would have to take that out and then you would have to agree in relation to various work, and it applies equally in municipalities, what the minimum amount of work and the minimum amount of workers that need to be there to keep that service functioning for the state, and for the populace, for the society at large. So, going back to the question on Eskom, there are two issues, and I may ask Mr. Fibra to come in if he wants to add, that Eskom workers in certain areas are declared essential services, and they have had a history in relation to that, and the collective agreement as it stands right now indicates for those essential services workers that are working in the minimum service, i.e. they have to keep working, their wage dispute should be referred to what's called interest arbitration, so that they would have their process dealt with that way. And that has happened in the CTMA over the last few years, where the CTMA has conducted after the negotiations have broken down an interest arbitration in relation to those workers. But the workers that do not perform in that essential service, for example, the ones that I've given, would be entitled to exercise the right to strike in terms of the Constitution. I'm going to ask Commissioner Sibidal, you asked a question about the glass sector, and I'm going to ask Commissioner Sibidal to explain what's going on in relation to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What the CCMA is doing with the glass sector is actually facilitating industry sustainability talks between the Glass Employers Association and the three unions. It is Sepawo, SACWO, and I just can't remember the name of the third union now. This has been going on for the better part of last year, and it was following a summit that was held by the sector where they realized that they were having job losses, that the production volumes would be squeezed somewhat, simply because they are competing with imported glass, competing with plastic, and competing even with paper. For example, you can buy wine in plastic or in paper, as opposed to traditionally that you buy it in glass. So we've been dealing with them and dealing with some very specific issues there. One of the issues is like trade and tariff relief. The other one is the cost of energy, because this is a very high energy intensive industry. Then we're dealing with competitiveness, we're dealing with representativity, amongst other things. Now that might sound like this is, what is the CCMA doing there, because, you know, this doesn't sound like what we usually do. What we are doing is we're actually facilitating this process. So we basically have meetings with the parties, arrange meetings with relevant departments. We've had some very successful meetings with the DGI, with the IDB, we've had meetings with EDD as well, to basically try and assist the sector to address these issues. But to give you one very small example, we have a manufacturer in South Africa that produces pharmaceutical products. Now, if you last went to the doctor, you remember if he gave you an injection, that injection came out of a glass vial that has a rubber band and an aluminium pot. Okay? Now, we have the facility to manufacture all of those items in South Africa. Okay? But if you import any one of those items, just a glass bottle, there are duties that protect it. If, however, you import penicillin already packaged like that, it comes in as what is called a medical instrument on which there is no duty. So it immediately puts, you know, local manufacturers at a disadvantage. But that's one of the examples of some of the things that we are dealing with. The sector is not on the verge of collapse, but the sector is in experiencing some serious distress that they need to address going forward. Thank you.
The next question was in relation to adhering to inefficient bargaining processes, and also I'll ask Commissioner Sugarlal to assist with that.
The manner in which we bargain is one of the key challenges facing collective bargaining in this country. That if you basically look at what has happened since 1994 to now, the big news is nothing has happened. We bargain exactly how we used to bargain. We bargain positionally, where situations basically exist where unions will come in requesting, you know, the highest possible percentage, and employers will basically come in offering the lowest possible percentage, and that is what we call positional bargaining. Now, there are more progressive ways to bargain, and one of the most progressive ways to bargain that has found good application in other jurisdictions is the concept of interest-based bargaining. And interest-based bargaining is basically where you're not talking about your positions, but actually your interest. Invariably, your position is the solution to a problem, but your perceived solution to a problem. For example, some years ago, in a particular bargaining arrangement, the union was demanding additional sick leave. So they basically said, we want 5 more days or 10 more days sick leave, and the employer, in true tradition with the positional bargaining, says, we got enough sick leave, it's status quo. But when we basically went into the problem and applied the principles of interest-based bargaining to that problem, we realized that what gave rise to that demand with the union was the fact that some of their members in a particular workplace had basically fallen off the HIV/AIDS employee assistance program, as a result of which they were getting more sick and had used up their sick leave. Now that was the problem. The perceived solution to that was give us more sick leave, but that doesn't solve the problem. Eventually what happened was we basically came together and made a dispensation in terms of those employees to assist them. But the main thing that contributed to solving the problem was a joint effort between employer and trade union to basically promote staying on the, or creating awareness about staying on the HIV EAP. But that's just one example of what interest-based bargaining is compared to positional bargaining. And positional bargaining is really not taking us anywhere. This is what you've been hearing of, 12,500 compared to 400 as positional bargaining.
Chair, the next question related to the platform strike. I think it's covered a lot of questions. I'll try and give upfront answers and then deal with specific questions that came from the members after that. The last question that was asked, the question that was asked by the Honourable Otis was, is the CTMA set up to deal with that problem? I think it's not a question where you can say yes or no. But the answer to the question is simply that, and as we said, that the challenge, the CTMA is set up to deal with workplace disputes that relate to the collective bargaining in relation to an employer and an employee. And what we said in that last slide is that we see a coalescing of the demands from the community and the demands from the workplace coming into the collective bargaining process. And that, of course, leads to huge challenges in relation to how we facilitate that, because CTMA is only given the power by this agency yourselves to deal with workplace issues, but it often becomes, and I'll just give a good example, in relation to how the challenge works in relation to that. I'm going to let Russell say something that you might want to, and then there are a whole lot of other questions, and we'll slowly go through the issues in relation to this. I'm just answering a question quickly there.
Just, I think one needs to look. I remember in 2012, I was with the then Director General of Labour, who is now Minister of Police, I think it is. Yes. And we, as part of that process of resolving the Marikana strike in 2012, we had to literally go to the mountain to talk to the workers. And it basically gave us an opportunity to really experience firsthand what was giving rise to this dispute. And when we drove away from there in this armored vehicle, I turned to him and I said, DG, you realize this is not a labor dispute? And he looked at me quizzically for a while, and then he shook his head because he realized. And what we saw there was socio-economic frustration that had been welling up for years and years, that basically found a fault line in a conflict-driven employment relationship and basically manifested as a labor dispute. The reality of the situation is nobody wants money for the sake of wanting money. Invariably, anybody who wants money, more money, basically wants it because they need to pay for something else, because they want to buy something else, they want to improve their lives in some ways or the other, but sometimes it is just to basically get ahead. What led to the platinum strike in 2012 and again now is the fact that since 1994 we have a completely untransformed migrant labor system. It is one of the most brutal migrant labor systems we have in the world. In Australia, they have migrant labor. But in Australia, you get to go home in a worst-case scenario after 2 weeks. In South Africa, it's worse than that. Sometimes, even though you have the ability to go home every weekend, the reality of the situation is you don't, and you end up going home once a year. And what has happened, that we've accepted, that we have now got sanitized language to talk about it. We don't talk about migrant labor. We talk about labor-sending areas that we need to protect, etc., is the reality that the average blue-collar worker who works on a mine, who comes from the Eastern Cape, has a family in the Eastern Cape, has a family locally in Rustenburg. So this person's network of financial dependence is very different from a person who lives in Alexandra in Johannesburg and works in Johannesburg, where he might have a wife and two children, or a wife and any number of children. This person has two families, okay? So immediately he needs a lot more money than what we might think he needs. In addition to that, we've been dealing with the ravages of HIV/AIDS and poverty and unemployment in this country that has basically caused other problems, so that the average person living in Kaneng, adjacent to Longman, has his local wife and child, but may well have inherited children from his sibling and their spouse that may have succumbed to HIV/AIDS, may well be supporting one or two relatives who have lost their jobs. And suddenly, this person, who ordinarily in a different situation would have one or two mouths to feed, is having 10 or 20 mouths to feed. He can't come out even with a 12,500. It's a huge problem. But throwing money at the problem is not the solution, because this is where it all went wrong in the mining sector, in the sense that, and this is thanks to, you know, the National Union of Mine Workers at the time, after a long fought for battle, basically believed that they had solved the problem of housing and accommodation by getting this thing called a housing allowance. But then we threw money at the problem. So what happens? The average housing allowance in the mining sector runs about 2,000 rands a month, okay? Now we're talking about the same person with this huge network of financial dependence. So given a choice between using that money to spend on housing, to spend on buying a house, to spend on building a house, or whatever, this person, it becomes an automatic choice for them if you can rent the plot in Penang for 600 rands. You've got 1,400 rands to pay for your expenses. So you rent a plot in Penang and you live in Penang. And one wonders why that happens. So what we're dealing with then is when we are having to deal with these issues, where even communities are getting involved because of the, you know, this network of financial dependence that basically runs from each mine worker or each blue collar worker, is that we are now dealing with problems where the unions will basically say the solution to this is 12,500. I'm basically saying, and I state on record, that if you gave people 12,500, it doesn't make the problem go away. So, you know, and the CCMA does not have the ability to deal with what gives rise to these problems, the socioeconomic frustration, in some cases the lack of service delivery, in some cases the delay in service delivery that causes the frustration. We can only deal, and we basically sit there and try to find a happy medium between the 400 rand that was offered and the 12,500 rand that was demanded. And it becomes increasingly difficult. What we need going forward, I would argue, is that we need to work in concert with other agencies and departments that can basically come to the party on a holistic approach to basically look at, you know, those issues as part and parcel of the negotiation. Otherwise, what happens is we go in and we negotiate and we come out with a settlement, and that settlement is there for a while, and before long we have a problem again, and it just goes in a cyclical, never-ending fashion that way. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll keep touching on the questions in relation to that. I'll move on to Honourable America's questions. The first question he asked us was in relation to budget and income classification and issue of other. Can I ask those people to answer that question?
Sorry,
she has written all the questions down for her. Could she ask them collectively, or would be better each individual?
As long as the questions are answered, this is not in our power to show you my capacity, but you cannot answer the question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll address service and all done and according to the how they were asked. The first question was what makes up the 40% of case disbursement? Case disbursement is mainly made up of the commissioner fees and the cost of travel for the commissioners going to different regions and offices, accommodation, and also the interpreters is all included under case disbursement. The second question was around the budget and income expenditure, what exactly makes up other income. Other income is two components, one being the services that CCMA renders, which is could be training and support to unions that would render require the services. Employers will actually send their shop steward more training services that are being offered. Some of the other revenue come from universities where they specifically approach CCMA for projects that they want PCMH, Henry Ford, and which are labor-related matters. And these services are actually done on a cost recovery basis. The third question was with regards to subsidy, and that budget, the 1% that's allocated to subsidy, that's the subsidy towards the bargaining council.
Just to clarify, since the question's been asked, it's a subsidy to bargaining councils who are accredited to perform a dispute resolution function, which is conducted by the sector bargaining council, so that they're taking some of the cases away from a CCMA. So to some degree they're supported by that, but they pay for it more themselves. So that's what the subsidy means in relation to this.
All right. The fourth question was with regards to the actual financial statement position in terms of where we stand from the audit point of view. I'll just highlight the fact that we only have audited financial statement for the year ending March 2013, in which we received a clean, unqualified audit report. We are currently going through 2014 audit, which at this stage it hasn't been finalized. It will be finalized by the 31st of July. But at the moment I can give an indication to say that we actually hold weekly audit steering committee meetings with our auditors, in whereby we discuss the findings that they picked up at the moment. And I am in the position to say that based on the committee that you've had, there is no matter or serious matter actually that has been raised by the auditors which may affect the audit report. So we are quite positive with the outcome that we have from this final audit. The last question that's finance related and also partly finance related and operations related was with regard to the core project in terms of the timeline. So I'll talk around it in the director with assisting also. Some of these core projects have already been done, like for example the opening of the Balcom office and the Val office, that's opened already. It's a matter of additional cost and maintenance that you have now of the, but it's already a running office. The establishment of the employment security units, that also is done, and it's more like now the operations and the ongoing then of that particular unit. The labor law amendments, that one we're still awaiting the promulgation, as the director indicated, but there's quite a lot of work that has been done with regards to the preparation in every aspect, training-wise. Both the commissioner work and the support work, which is the administrative employees, how our work will be affected by the implementation of this labor law amendment, the impact that it will have to the organization as a whole. And also the rollout of the web of the case management system, the web-enabled case management system, that is also ongoing, and we see still that increase going through. So what I wanted to highlight from the financial point of view is that the funding that we received from the Treasury for the first 3 years of this project, which are 2013, 2014, and 2015, a lot of it, or more of it, is more around the infrastructure spending, and then when everything or the system is then in place, it is more of support and the general operations then of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Just before you just explain further, I didn't understand this 1%, I understand it's given to you and the money is just
signature.
Yeah, it's given details. And,
right.
And the 1% of how much is it 1% that you give? How often do you give this 1%? How do that come from it? Just
Just as a reminder, that in addition to the CCMA, they're bargaining councils, who are set up by the stakeholders for different areas who formulate those bargaining councils for the interests of their sector. They have that to deal with dispute resolution, to deal with bargaining, to deal with provident funds, Medicaid, so a whole range of things. But the CCMA's involvement is only in relation to dispute resolution. they set up in relation to dispute resolution, and they are required to apply to the CCMA's accreditation subsidy subcommittee of the governing body for accreditation. They apply to be accredited as a bargaining council for dispute resolution in terms of the Labour Relations Act, and as the chair has indicated, that's the function of the governing body can't delegate. So all the councils apply in terms of the policy and the criteria set out in the law to be accredited. If you are accredited by the governing body, cases which are heard which are non-party related, so if they're party-party dispute, that means party to the council. The council would have to pay for the case in terms of if a dismissal was referred or any kind of case that the CCMA could deal with. They can't deal with all the cases the CCMA can deal with, but they mainly deal with misconduct, incapacity kind of cases. Then if it was a non-party case and they apply to the CCMA in terms of its budget policy needs to subsidize the hearing of that case financially. So they would apply on a monthly basis how many cases they've heard, proving that it's dealt with by those parties, proving that they're accredited. CCMA has a whole function that evaluates that, and that the payment to them is affected based on the fact that they have presented the case to either be heard or closed or is resolved in terms of the policy that's agreed, and then the councils are subsidized in relation to that. So what the CFO was indicating is that 1% of the CCMA's granted budget gets paid to councils for their non-party disputes in relation to dispute resolution. Am I clear? So I can, it's complicated. I can explain more. Okay, thanks.
No, it's fine. I'm sure by the time you come back, we will be more limited on how to do it. But it's just to open the light. I don't know if that is more questions on this. No, it's not a question. It's just a proposal. The director.
You are always reminding us that you are new people, but also as an old person, I would remind you that the manner in which we operate as this committee, we allow the speaker to finish whatever one is saying. So be patient with the chair, because I'm picking up that you are in a hurry to respond. As a result, sometimes you don't even allow her to finish her question. So that's why we allow you to say everything you want to say and say afterwards. So that imitates us. We'll also try and meet you halfway.
Was the entity still on the budget, on the finance? We would love to know that in the current financial year 2014-15, a total of 78.99% of the labor policy and industrial relations program was transferred to the CCMA, with a total of 67.1 million rand during the current financial year. This is consistent with the focus on promoting sound labor relations, with a particular emphasis on the resolution of the industrial action and the reduction of tensions and violence in the labor market. In the 2013 budget, the Commission has allocated additional funds to address increasing case loads arising from the amendments to the labor laws, the rollout of the web-based case management system, which we have talked about, expansion of access to dispute resolution services as well as job saving units. Now, the portfolio committee made recommendations for a budget adjustment to increase the baseline of the CCMA due to a growing demand for services and interventions as well. How has this budget increased as the federal government?
The CFO is not really competent, I'm not competent to answer that question, because it's not a finance question, it's more around the work area. Could I answer that on her behalf? The additional money, what you're reading off is exactly what we're indicating. If we go back to the slide where the GFO indicated we've given, been given an additional amount of money to deal with specific projects, those specific projects in particular dealt with the implementation of the upcoming labor relations, labor law amendment, not just labor relations act amendment. In addition to that, the opening of the offices to increase accessibility, also to enable the case management system. And there's a third one, I've forgotten, but it's very important. The CMA has prepared itself and is ready for the implementation of the labor relations amendment in relation to what we've been given. But obviously they haven't actually passed. So at this point, we've utilized certain parts of the allocation which deal with preparing the organization, training commissioners, training staff, training case management officers, training external people, training stakeholders, and also designing training courses. And certain areas of the work require specialist work. We've also allocated specialist commissioners to that and specialist training in relation to that. In relation to the accessibility area, CFO indicated that we had utilized the funds, and so we are ready to implement the amendments, and we've obviously benefited CCMA by making sure everybody's ready, depending on when the amendments are implemented. We have opened the new offices in Val and Valcom. That has benefited workers, particularly in the area, so that they don't have to travel so far to refer cases, and to make sure we can have hearings closer to the workplaces or the living places of the people affected in relation to that. So it improves the CCMA's support to workers and accessibility in relation to that. The information that we put up there is captured on our case management system, which manages all the cases that come in. But in relation to our accessibility program, the Department of Labor also allocated additional money so we could, as we indicated earlier, ensure that that system is available in the Department of Labor offices. So in addition to the 21 offices that CCMA has, in the 25 offices that's in the Department of Labor, it further increases accessibility of the CCMA so that workers can come in to the CCMA, check on their case without having to travel far to any other CCMA office nearby, because the Department of Labor employees have access to look up what's going on in the case, to take in the referral, to help the employer in relation to the case, whatever the case may be in relation to the need of the individual citizen who's coming in. So that's supported, ensuring that we've got better accessibility to all the workers and all the users of the CCMA and who have labour issues. Then, the Employment Security Unit. The Employment Security Unit, as indicated, was set up because of the concerns starting from 2008 in the relation to the rise of retrenchments in the sector. And we realized that we needed to have a far more holistic intervention, which didn't just deal with dealing with the cases as they came into the CCMA. We made sure our services were more available widely. If we heard about a retrenchment pending, we would phone up and ask the employers, do they need assistance, or ask the trade unions, do they need assistance. We would link with other Department of Labor entities, as I indicated, like Productivity SA, the UIF, if the retrenchments were being affected, to make sure this facilitates more quickly issues in relation to that. We've utilized that to make sure that the assistance to workers who are facing retrenchment is speedier and more effective, and that they are able to be dealt with in a focused manner and not just as if they referred the general case to the CCMA of misconduct, because in that situation it's a non-forced dismissal and one wants to make sure that people are supported in relation to that. So I would suggest that the rise in the CCMA case, as I indicated earlier, also happens when you open new offices and increase accessibility. So as indicated in the section that you read off, Honourable Matash, the CCMA case does go up, and so that's why the Department of Labor has allocated finances in relation to that. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I was going to continue with the rest of the question. Sorry.
Thank you. Just before you go to the question, since you have touched this question of 21 topics around the culture, exactly where are they located? For example, in the Western Cape, where are they, which provinces? I'm more interested in those things in particular.
Offices where you can refer cases to the CCMA, there's two in the Western Cape. One is in the Cape Town and one is in George. But then there are a host of venues where on certain days in the community, the commissioners would hear, well, they hear cases every day, but there's certain days in the community, for example, in the farming community, the workers would be able to go and refer cases to the CCMA commissioners or and the interpreters who are there. So that's how it would operate. So we have a whole lot of offices which are physical bricks and mortar, and we have venues that we utilize in various areas, often municipal offices, libraries, so we're not overextending ourselves in relation to having so many offices that we need to run.
It's only us. Do you want to ask
questions
on this issue?
Madam Chair, I would like to make a comment, if I may,
on
this particular
issue.
Yes, I was, since the inception of the CCMA, I was a user. The question from the director, that was given to the director, is absolutely correct. There are thousands of venues around the country. They set it up wherever it's needed. I just wanted to point out that it's probably the largest dispute resolution body in the world, and it's probably the most effective. So I just wanted to add to that, if I may, sorry.
Sure.
I send the input because you are saying you are from the CCMA.
No, I was a user. Since the inception of the CCMA, I was a user as a litigant
of
the services of the CCMA.
In which way you come from?
I was an attorney in the CCMA.
Okay. Another
point, Chair, thanks for making me follow on this matter, because the director is saying here in Western Cape there are only two. Which means if you subtract two from the 21, you remain with 90 on paper. But she's also saying there are other venues now who are no longer sure as to whether these other venues are part of the 19 or the 19 are part of the other venues, which is a little bit of a challenge. Because if you are saying here there are two in the entire province, so big, and from there you are not sure as to where are the others and whether there are other venues or their offices physically. It's a little bit of a challenge, Chair. Maybe it can be that the director can clarify it further.
I think I'll allow the further clarification before I pose the follow-up question. In your clarification, you might add a comment on my question.
Thank you, Chair. The 21 offices are the main offices that are gazetted for the CCMA services, and they are the offices where we have the main infrastructure, and we have staff permanently employed and who've come to work there every day. But in addition to that, commissioners, I'm telling you the broad countrywide, and then go to the Western Cape, the commissioners travel to all sorts of venues, and they are not physical offices every single day where somebody comes and gets up and goes to work. And they are not included in the 21. They are outside of that. So let's say, for example, we have cases in the De Doorns area, but you don't get cases every single day. So we would make sure that we manage that a commissioner gets sent to that area a week a month, or every Thursday and Friday of a month, let's say an example. And then they would also have an interpreter in the area. And we would use through our dispute management services a process where we make sure that communities and trade unions in the area and workers and employers know the CCMA is in that area at that time. And then they would have access to come and talk to the interpreter and the commissioner, get advice, refer cases. We would do the work for them, and then we use our electronic systems and our case management system to capture those information, to sent back into our server process. So it avoids the worker having to come into the CCMA. And it looks like that in every single province in relation to the kind of work that we do. And I also want to just say, and maybe I might be clear enough, that on the question in relation to special projects from the Department of Labour and the money that we were given, we used the electronic case management system to develop it more so that in the Department of Labour offices, if you've got a CCMA-related query, you can go into the Department of Labour and you can ask a official from the Department of Labour to put a CCMA query. And they've got individuals who've been trained by the CCMA, so we're working together. And they will be able to access our system, assist them to fill in a form or assist to give them information and also contact somebody on the CCMA line in relation to that. So in addition to the 21 offices and the venues that I'm talking about, and I have to check with the acting GD, but I think it's 25 the offices that the Department of Labour have, the CCMA also has access in all those offices as well. But it's not GDL cases, in some cases it is, but not GDL cases, but also so workers can go in, get information, refer their case, fill out their 7-11 form, and sorry, 7-11 form is a form that you complete when you want to refer a case or a dispute to the CCMA. And there will be somebody there to assist and make sure you capture it, so that you wouldn't have to travel the far distance to the other office.
But that's the last question on this issue of the location. You've mentioned the Cape Town and you've mentioned George. Exactly where is George?
I'm not familiar with George, but I can give you the address.
Is it in the town?
Yes, it is in the town, George.
Yes.
Okay. Cathedral Street, yeah.
So you're saying Ms. Khan, that these offices are located where both the employers and the employees might find easy to access them.
Sure, yes. In many cases, not in all cases, but yes.
Definitely. I must take what you are saying, not in many cases, because if you are talking of the Western Cape, you've got most of the workers, they will come from Khayelitsha, they will come from Kokoletu, they will come from Mitchell's Plain, and most of the workers are not in town. What you will find in town is the employer. Same thing in George. I'm concerned, but I don't want to say, I won't say today, because I would want to see the list of these 21 and where they are located. And I would advise, as you open further offices, you must put the township on the top list. Because then, at the end, it is the government that must answer. The services are very far from the people. Your colleague was talking about service delivery when you referred to Mark Khan. So if we're talking about service delivery of the government, they are very far from people, and people have no money to travel to town. The services are where you have people who have everything. That's a concern, and you must correct it. After this 21, make it a point that you correct.
I think break for tea just for 10 minutes, which is at the back, and then you can continue with the questions. Thanks. Honorable Matisha, I invited a meeting with tea. We are close, we are going for tea, we can talk or we'll talk after.
Thank you. Thank you.